Yes, sir.
All right, we're sitting here with Cocaine, the legend, living legend right now. And it's a pleasure, man, talking to you again. It's been a while since you boys on Dub CNN. What you been doing?
Yeah. Man, it's a whole lot been on my plate. It's been good for the last year and a half. I've just been extremely working hard in the studio.
Okay.
And, boy, we got a whole list of things.
All right. Before we get into, like, what you've been doing lately, I'd like to go back in time with you. What was it like growing up being the son of the famous Motown composer, Jerry Long Sr.?
Well, in likeness of, you know, my dad, Jerry Long Sr., you know, that was his thing. Because, you know, it's just like my son. You know, you got to grow up and go out there and get your own thing going.
Right.
But it was good, though, because, you know, I didn't understand it until I started really getting shrewd and good with the music.
Mm-hmm.
That, wow, this right here is in the blood. And it was a good thing, man, because he made some very, very good hits back in the days. Just My Imagination, Still Waters Run Deep, and working with Quincy Jones and all that. So it was a good thing. That let me know that I came from, you know, that type of backing. And it just inspired me more to go out there and just attack it like I do.
Right. And how old were you when you first started singing and finding an interest in music?
Well, like 5 years old.
Damn, that's young.
Yeah, I'm 39 now.
When did you make that transition into becoming a full-fledged musician, though?
When I seen Grandmaster Flash.
Okay.
Furious Five. And, when you know, back in those days, when I was in, you know, Curtis Blow.
Right.
All that, you know what I mean? I'm a hip-hopper to the fullest. And then my cousin had a group called Wizards of Rock.
Right.
In the mid-80s, and then they transferred over to Above the Law.
Okay.
Yeah, so that really hyped me extra to see different things like that. Just to also see George Clinton, Parliament, Grandmaster Flash. It had overall a big impact from Bob Marley. And also seeing Cole 187, Hutch, Gregory Hutchison.
Yeah.
And see how he get down on stage. I learned a lot from that dude right there, my cousin.
Okay. I didn't know y'all was cousins.
Yeah, that's my cousin.
Okay. Next question
is... He's the one who really pushed me to, like, do it. Think, you know, because when Easy and them came around, it was like, wow. Like, man, it was the first one to touch on something.
Mm-hmm.
It was really like a movement. And then when I found out Above the Law sign... You know, because I was always rhyming. And back then, my name used to be Jay Golden. You know, we was on some hip-hop to the fullest.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, after seeing Cole 187 and them, I said, man, it's time to get with it. Because it wasn't gangster rap then. It was reality rap.
Yeah.
And then that just really perpetuated me to just, man, just do what I do. And when he gave me the name, it was over with.
Who gave you the name, Eric?
No, 187.
Okay. Now, how did you hook up with Eric at first?
Well, through Above the Law, through Laylaw.
Yeah.
It was a thing called Law House Records.
Okay.
And, you know, Laylaw, of course, is one of the founding members, too, of NWA.
Yeah.
And, you know, he signed, after Cole 187 did the tracks, we did two songs, demos, and after we did that, you know, Easy heard it, and after two songs, he said, man, I got my George Clinton.
Dope. Damn right.
Sign me. Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, what was the atmosphere like in the studio back then? Is it different than from now?
Oh, it was beautiful, because you got to realize, anything that's part of a movement, social and economically, it has a big impact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when Bob Marley first did, or it's like when Marvin Gaye first did. It's the same, you got to realize. When N.W.A. touched on that line, Eazy-E, when they opened up that can of worms,
mm-hmm.
of course Ice-T was the first one to set the foundation. But when N.W.A. put the house on it, it was over with. So in the midst of every all that was going on, it was a culture shock. Not only that, it was like Beatlemania, homie.
Right.
And throughout all the, you know, the history of, you know, Jerry Long, Cocaine being in this game, there has never been, in my opinion, and hands-on experience an impact like NWA had. Period.
Mm.
It was bananas, homie. It was crazy.
What was it like when you first saw, like, Ice Cube first left and then Dre left? How did you think about that?
Well, I was loyal, regardless. I mean, the first people on Death Row, people got to realize this, see? Back then, the old history was this, you know. Back when we was running around, you know, Suge just came out of college from UNLV, so he used to bodyguard for DOC. He was his bodyguard.
Yeah, I know.
And then after that, you know, when we started hanging out, everybody was knowing each other. You know, DOC lost his voice. Mm. Above the Law was doing their thing. And back during the time to where everybody fell out, is because of one thing. I don't want to say his name, but I'll just say it like this. They say Jerry Heller was in the midst of really just, you know, brainwashing the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Ice Cube, in his opinion, you know, he was the first one to leave.
Yeah.
So when Dre, Above the Law and Cocaine, was like getting the idea that Eric is janky, Eazy-E was janky,
mm-hmm.
we decide to all band up together and start our own company.
Mm-hmm.
Suge was in the forefront of it. Because Suge used to be around Above the Law and Cocaine all the time.
Right.
So we had came up something we used to call ourselves the Aftermath in 1992.
Damn.
Before it was even happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to call this thing that we said we made up, because Above the Law and Cocaine made up that. In 1990, we said we wanted to do our funk called G-Funk. Yeah. Yeah, we started that, man, and it's just like, you know, during that time, you know, we thought Eazy was tripping. So we came up to the studio. It was in Inglewood.
Mm-hmm.
It was Dre. It was Snoop, and of course, was there, because the first people to found the talent and really put it on was Cole 187.
Yeah, I heard that he found Snoop, and you guys had Snoop before he signed to Death Row.
Yes, exactly.
What happened to that? Why did he leave with Dre?
What happened to that was this. What happened to that, we was working on my album, Funk Upon a Rhyme.
Okay.
Right? So, let me finish telling you that when we met up to the studio, we was like, Eazy tripping, Dre Hutch, and then all of us was in the room, like, all everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then Suge was like, well, then what y'all want to do? So we wanted to start this thing called Death Row Records, right?
Right.
So we went to Hollywood. It was at the Solar Building, Dick Griffio Building.
Mm-hmm.
And we had came up with a couple of things. The first people that was going to come out on Death Row was going to be Above the Law and Cocaine, with Dre behind the stuff doing what he was going to do. That was when Deep Cover was finna come out.
Right.
And what had happened was this. Eazy had called us because we was like, man, we ain't just finna leave like that. We finna talk it out with this brother and see what the hell's going on with it.
Mm.
So what we did was this. We had a meeting with Eazy-E. And Dre was supposed to be there, but Dre never did show up at all.
Mm-hmm.
Dre never did show up. So we renegotiated with Eazy, and we stayed with him.
Right.
Right? So during that time, Snoop Dogg and Warren G, which was Snoop Dogg's DJ at that time, said they got a dude named Nate Dogg sing straight from the church. So they all came up there. During that time that we wanted to work on Snoop Dogg's album, we couldn't because we had to work on my second album. My second album was called Funk Upon a Rhyme.
Man, no.
We couldn't work on that album, so it put Snoop in a situation where, like, damn, what the hell am I going to do? I can't wait on Cocaine all day to do his thing. So Warren G, during the time they started the Death Row, it was just Dre over there. I mean, I got the magazine article to prove it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we went out. Warren G called Dre and them and said, look, Hutch and them can't work on Snoop and my album,
mm-hmm.
so could we come over there? That's when Snoop Dogg made the transition between Above the Law and Death Row.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when he made that transition, it was a cover call coming out. It was a movie with Larry Fishburne called Deep Cover. I'm on that soundtrack, too.
Yeah.
Called Nickel Slick Nigga.
Yeah, I know.
I'm on that soundtrack. So that landed Snoop's career right there. And I'm going to tell you something. And this is real talk. If at a time I wasn't working on that album, Above the Law would have, Snoop would have never been over there at Death Row right away.
Right.
But everything happened for a reason, because he went over there at a time to where Dre was hot.
Yeah.
Dre got this new thing, and it just opened up a can of worms. You know, Snoop Dogg was one of the best freestylers I ever heard in this game. Real talk.
Yeah.
So he went over there, and it was like, damn, that's when the beef started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dre never renegotiated with Eazy-E and them, so it was Death Row against Ruthless.
Yeah.
So that's why, when I fuck upon a rhyme, that's why I was saying certain things at the time we was on each other, like y'all stole our shit.
Yeah.
G-Funk, Aftermath, everything. Y'all stole our shit.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, I remember
that.
So
it was like, you know, it was a difference of opinions. Then you had Corrupt diss me on something called Blunts and Tangeray.
Yeah.
Me and Hutch.
Yeah.
So we replied back with Don't Bite the Funk, Defeat You.
Yeah.
And keep in mind this too. The Chronic album completely almost sounds like Black Mafia life. Because I'm going to tell you the real. Hutch showed Dre a lot of things, which Dre is a genius if Hutch never did show him. Dre is one of the biggest persons in the game. But Hutch showed him a lot of stuff. Hutch gave him break beats on NWA and all kind of stuff.
Mm.
Didn't get the credit.
Yeah.
I'm telling it like it is. For the whole world to know, this is how I go down.
Right.
So that's what started the beef between Ruthless and Death Row.
And we all know the beef went on for a long period of time, but was the beef ever taken to the street level?
Well, of course it was. It was taken to the street level, but they didn't want to. I'm going to tell you this. Nobody didn't want to see parts of Eazy, because Eazy, I'm going to say it like this, Eazy was connected. Real talk. I mean, all that stuff that, and I'm telling it like it is, that Daz and Corrupt at the time was dissing them.
Mm-hmm.
And doing certain things, because Daz and them is my boys, Daz and Corrupt, they're my homies for life. We put all that past us, but at that time, Eazy was basically telling them, you can do this, Dre, you can do that, but I get more money off your own project, and you can diss me. That's why Eazy was slow to diss them back, because he was getting paid more money than them.
It's crazy.
So Eazy was like the first one, like, really PIing it on the number scale and contract scale. See, Eazy was intellectually putting it down.
Yeah.
Period. So they couldn't really mess with him.